right, just a kind of quick review. Remember in verse 2 of chapter 1, the book is sort of a flashback. She mentions about her man that there's two things about him that are of note. Okay, she says his oils have a pleasing fragrance and his name is purified oil. The issue of the name is exceedingly important. Name is reputation. Name is character. Name is who you are when no one is looking. She says specifically of his name that he is not just oil, he's what kind of oil? Purified oil. First pressed oil, literally, is what it means, which was used in temple worship. The point being, his reputation was godly. She was not impressed at how much he could bench. She was not impressed by how big his truck was. She was impressed by the fact that the very mention of this guy's name is like worship to the people around. So she is beginning to be attracted to this guy based on who he is on the inside. Now, thus far with him, we don't know if he's tall, dark, and handsome. All we know is he doesn't have BO. Literally, that's the only thing we get. Because that's not the point. The point is she is drawn to who he is. Interesting, in our culture, again, we tend to caricaturize men as being oafs, as being one-track mind. It's all about sex or bacon. Like one of those two, and that's all a guy thinks about. This guy is bringing now the concept that it's broader than that. It's deeper than that. He is in touch with who he is. You're going to hear him today, fellas, speak in a way that really should challenge us as to how we communicate, how we articulate, not what we think, but what we feel. Most guys live above the line, meaning they're cognitive. So when you talk to a guy, you're getting data. But you're going to find this guy is able to integrate head and heart. This guy's able to communicate at a heart level of, no, this is how I feel. And he'll take the risk and allow her to protect herself, which we'll get into in a little bit. Notice at the bottom of verse 3, what do you see there? Chapter 1, verse 3. What's it say? Therefore, the maidens or the virgins love you. This guy, remember, is not just popular, he's respected. There's a difference. They're drawn to this guy. He's a guy that other girls are going, oh yeah, that guy. He's on all of their list. To the point where in verse 4, they're going to say, draw me after you, let us run together. The king has brought me into his chamber. We will rejoice in you and be glad. We will extol your love more than wine. Rightly do they love you. So the narrator, if you will, in this poem, the daughters of Jerusalem say, look, rightly do they love you. This guy is legit, and it's not just her who thinks it. On a side note, and we'll get to it again here in a little bit. Ladies, you want to be really mindful if you think a guy is awesome and all your friends think he's a little creepy. You just want to be careful. Because either everyone else is wrong, or you're seeing things not clearly, okay? And we'll talk about the beauty of being affirmed by plurality here in just a little bit. So we see at the end of verse 4, this guy has character, this guy is godly, this guy's reputation is that he is a worshiper of the Lord. In our context, we would say, ladies, he reads his Bible, it's well marked up, okay? He's not just, you know, like chilling at church, checking Sports Center, all right? The guy is in. He's on mission trips, he's serving, he comes early, he stays late, he's faithful in his life group, he's faithful to his past, you know, with his pastor, he's living accountably. The only way you know that is if you watch him over time, which means pump the brakes, slow down. You know, just because you see a guy and he says he's godly, he might be, but let me give you a principle. Godliness at a point in time means nothing. But godliness over time means everything. What's the difference? Well, sorry, fellas, I'm going to sell us out a little bit, but for most guys, we can become anything in the short term. So I remember going to church as a guy who, I never went to church ever unless I dated a girl who was a Christian. Do you go to church? Oh, yeah. Sure. Where do you want to go? Well, I go here. Well, let's go there then. I'd carry a Bible, whatever. I didn't care about the Lord, I cared about her. And because it was important to her, sure, I can do that. No problem. Ladies, you do not want a guy like that. So ask some questions. That's my point. Slow down. Pump the brakes. Ask questions. What's his life really like? And if you're not sure, if you're like, wow, I think he goes to church, he might be a believer. Just in the last couple weeks, I was talking with someone, in case you saw me talking to this person. And they're in a relationship. And they're saying, hey, look, I need your advice. They go, what's the deal? They go, I'm dating this guy. But he's not a believer. But I really think I can help him come to faith. Literally, right? Quote, unquote. That's what she says. I'm like, sweet. Okay. I said, tell me about this relationship. Well, you know, he's a good guy, but he does drink a little bit. I said, has he pushed you beyond moral boundaries that you're comfortable with? She says, yeah, but we're really working on that. He gets a little angry, and like she keeps going, and I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, you're in a situation right now where this guy has no reason to not continually defile you, because you haven't put up any boundaries, you haven't, you know, said anything to this guy. Not only that, but you're allowing this stuff to go on. Why are you even with a guy like that? Well, but her heart was involved. And so she got involved with a guy she didn't know his character. One thing led to another, and now she feels trapped. That story happens 100 times, you know, in a month here at this church, unless we can change that, right? So that's the challenge, all right? Pump the brakes, find out who he is. Now, what we know about this girl, again, verse 5, she's black but lovely. There's not a physical beauty about her that she's willing to pub. That's not her bait. There's a deeper beauty, that imperishable quality, the gentle and quiet spirit. She says in verse 6 that her mother's sons were angry with her. Her brothers made her caretakers of the vineyard she couldn't take care of, her own vineyard. Keep note of that concept of vineyard. You're going to see that again. She's referring to her body, meaning she's not a princess. She's not a diva. All right, she's willing to go work. She's willing to break a nail. She's willing to get outside of that sort of princess persona and to actually do a little labor there. There's two characteristics we saw, hardworking and submissive. Those sort of set up now the right type of person. And I'm making the argument, I don't think there's one person for you. I think the sovereign God of the universe is bigger than like coincidental. Boom, I met the guy at Trader Joe's. He was getting a banana. I was getting some, you know, trail mix. I think he might be the guy. I don't think that's the way the Lord works. And I think, honestly, the focal point for you in terms of attraction is not the person you're looking for, but the person you're becoming. So if you're going to invest energy and effort, don't invest energy and effort on eHarmony trying to find the right match. Invest your energy and effort. It's not to say that's a bad thing, but your primary energy and effort should be you becoming the right type of person. Because if the sovereign God of the universe is able to create this world, set it in motion, draw you out of the pit of hell, save you for himself, do you think God's able to provide for you at the proper time? Then lean into that and now trust him, okay? We saw in verse 7, though, they initiate some time together. And she says, where do you pasture your flocks? And we ask the question, is it okay for a girl to initiate with a guy? I said, my opinion, it's okay but not preferred. And the issue ultimately is the pattern it creates. We are raising, unfortunately, a generation of boys that are overly bonded to their mothers, that have been babied forever, that are entitled, that are video game junkies at the age of 40, where mom's still doing your laundry and mom's still making your lunch. And I would say, look, if we're going to be husbands, if we're going to be fathers, before all of that, we need to become men. And we've got 35, 40-year-old boys dating, hoping to marry a mom. And so they go passive. She does everything. And he's cool with that because he got another hookup. So mom took care of me. Now she'll take care of me. That's not what a man is. A man should step up and provide some initiative, right? So she says, where do you pasture your flocks? I want to meet you. What she's saying is, I want to find out where guys like you are because I want to put myself where guys like you are. Now, it doesn't mean she's out clubbing, because the type of guy she's talking about, his reputation is like worship. So don't be surprised if you're swinging the club scene, right? Looking around for a godly dude. Don't be surprised if you don't find them there, because that's not where they are. Where are they? They're at church. I used to joke, by the way, how many Old Testament characters did you find found a spouse at the well? I mean, right? I mean, you find that
you know, all the way through. That's not why we called our church the well, but
we've had a lot of fun making fun of that. The point being, ladies, if you want to find the right type of guy, it is completely appropriate for you to put yourself in a position where you'll meet a godly dude. So find out where they're at. Look, if they're at the 7, show up to the 7. There's no shame in that. If they're at the young professionals group, show up at the young professionals group. No shame in that. That's great. If there's a group of guys going to play ultimate frisbee, you and your homegirls giggle and go out there and play ultimate frisbee. No problem with that. But I want you to keep reading the verse. Because it's okay to put yourself where godly men are, but it's not okay to compromise on something else. Notice what it says there. Where do you pasture your flock? Where do you make it lie down at noon? For why should I be like one who veils herself beside the flocks of your companions? What does that mean, veil yourself? You've all finished Genesis, right? Why is it that we have all of this backstory on Abraham, a little bit on Isaac, a bunch of backstory on Jacob, maybe the main character of the book. Oh, side note, Joseph, so that Exodus makes sense. But in Genesis 48, there's this random chapter about Judah. And Judah goes to visit Tamar. And Tamar does what to disguise herself? Veils herself. And pretends she's a what? Prostitute. So this woman says, where do you hang out? I wouldn't mind spending time with you and guys like you, but let me tell you something. I will not be like one who veils herself by the flocks of your companions. What's she saying, ladies? Yeah, I want to spend time with you, but don't think I'm, if I can just say, easy. Don't think I want to be sexual with you. Don't think I'm willing to cross moral boundaries with you. Don't think that just because I'm hanging out with you, you can start messing around with me. That's not going to happen, but I want to spend time with you. And guys like you. And you'll hear about guys like you when they start into the dating portion in verse 8. But I think that's a huge, huge issue. Ladies, you need to right now decide, like Daniel and the boys in captivity in Babylon, what you will do and what you won't do, and you need to decide now. Because in the moment, it always feels right. You understand what I'm saying there? So when it comes to what's appropriate for you or what's not, have your standards now. And recognize that Christians historically are awful. We are so bad. Because we say stupid things like, okay, nothing laying down, nothing below the neck, nothing comes off. And guys are creative. We're like, yeah, we can still, yeah, we can do something. Sure. I mean, even with those boundaries, right? That's not a good boundary. You need to write down now what it is you're looking for, what it is you'll do, what it is you won't do. What does it look like to veil yourself in our culture? And what are your standards? So somebody asked me, I've got two daughters, and I think I mentioned last week, I grew up with just my pops. Dad dated quite a bit, so it was just a weird, like, I'm just very confused as to what it meant to be with a woman, to understand a woman, to honor a woman was a huge sanctification process for me. So I get married, and that process just intensifies. And then we're pregnant, and I'm thinking, come on, boy, boy, boy. Sure enough, girl. I'm like, ooh, okay. Pregnant again, boy, boy, boy. Sure enough, girl. I'm like, all right, Lord, I get it. I get it. This is what I get for being who I was, but also this is an opportunity to raise a girl without a father wound. Like, that sounds great. Because as you look at a lot of ladies, a lot of difficulties come, and ladies, you're probably, obviously you know better than I do, that relationship with your dad's very important. And if that relationship with pops is jacked, then you end up acting out in a very jacked up way. And so I go, okay, I'm going to raise daughters without a father wound. So somebody asked me the other day, when are you going to let your daughters date? That doesn't make me feel very comfortable, to be honest with you. But my oldest is 13. So whether I like it or not, it's coming. And I said, well, here's where I'm at today. The reason I say today is, you know, it's easy to make standards, rules, whatever, before that. But once that time comes and she's crying, we may have to negotiate some things. But here's where I'm coming from at this point. Here's what I think would be good for her. I said, okay, look, my daughter can date when she writes me a letter telling me why she thinks she's ready. I want her to think through it. I want her to be able to articulate it. I want her to be able to talk about her character. I want her also to be able to articulate what she's willing to compromise and what she won't, what her standards are and what they're not. I want her to be able to say, I will not do this with a boy. I will not be here with a boy. These things are appropriate. At which point, I will, after talking with her, give her permission to date on the condition of no boy dates her until he dates me. And if he's willing to just have some coffee with me so I can get to know him, then I'll open the door to talk to my daughter. Now, texting is interesting because texting is easy, right? And so she can text anybody she wants as long as I'm included in the group text. No problem. Text everybody. Emoji, emoji, emoji. I'll put up with bing, 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 bing. Fine. I'll put up with that as long as I'm in the text. So those are the things that I want her to think through ahead of time. Ladies, you need to think through those things ahead of time as well. Though you're not my 13-year-old daughter and far beyond that, you still need to have your standards. This woman has it. She'll compromise a lot. She will not compromise her character. Because once you compromise it, you can't ever get it back. Okay, you see that there? Now, let's watch them begin to date, verse 8. They start spending time together. And she's told by the daughters of Jerusalem where this guy is. She says, oh, I forgot about, can I give you the three things on looks-based attraction? The problem with it? We didn't go into it much last week. So if I'm a guy who's attracted to a girl based on how she looks, which is the typical pattern, there are three problems that you're going to have with that over time, okay? First of all, the issue is looks don't last, right? I look back at my dad's wedding picture, his like wedding album with my mom. So this was like old school. I look back at that, I'm like, oh, dude, like they let you wear that? That is so bad. And what kind of haircut did you have? My gosh, I mean, come on, right? Have you ever done that with your folks? You just look back, you're like, what happened? Okay. Well, the irony is I look at my own wedding picture. I'm like, what kind of friends were Mike and Shay? They let me wear that? Like that haircut was awful, right? And when I got married, I did what most engaged couples do, like fasted and tried to become a bodybuilder to change everything in a matter of months, right? So I was at a gym. I actually worked at a gym at the time. So I'm trying to get fit and I'm trying to look good. And I'm eating rice or chicken and broccoli. I mean, I'm just like doing everything I could, right? So on my wedding, I mean, I looked as good as I thought I could do it. Like, I went for it. Well, the problem is you could, you know, imagine over time, that's not the case anymore. In fact, the story that I tell is, there was one time I'd gotten out of the shower, and I was kind of looking in the mirror, doing, you know, what we all do, just like, oh, gosh, what's that? And I look back, and I had this big, like, patch of back hair that's, like, creeping around, and I'm not a fan of back hair. I'm like, oh, gosh. You know, I'm like, ah! I look back, and as I looked at it, my back fat creased. And I'm like, oh, I felt like I could put a Sharpie in there and sign an autograph or something. You know, I'm like, what in the world? And so I grabbed my little muffin top and shook. Have you ever done that? Like, everything's shaking. And I hear this giggle. And in the room, adjacent to my bathroom, of course, is my wife. And she's cracking up. Because the principle is true, right? Looks don't last. Look, if you are attracted to someone simply because of who they are on the outside, they will not look like that forever. But if you're attracted for who they are on the outside doesn't matter. Now, I say doesn't matter, and people go, you mean I should date somebody I'm not attracted to? That's not what I said. What I'm saying is the primary thing you should be attracted to is the inside, right? So looks don't last. Second problem with looks-based attraction is looks can be deceiving. Looks can be deceiving. Have you ever met someone who was beautiful and you just thought to yourself, wow, stunning. And then they open their mouth and you're like, oh, golly, who talks like that, right? I remember meeting people in college, even in grad school, you know, I was like, wow, that girl is gorgeous. Not in a creepy way of just like, note to self. Wow. And then they open their mouth. I'm like, man, that is filthy. Or, you know, my context, I'm not a huge fan of smoking, you know. And so you pull up, you look over, I'd see some girl. I'm like, oh, wow, she's cute. And she's like, hey, what's going on? You know, I'm like, ah! So, you know, look, looks can be deceiving. At the end of the day, if it's pretty on the outside, you might open it up and it's just like a polished turd. Like it doesn't. You don't want someone who on the inside is not beautiful, right? So don't buy into the outside. Final one is looks are always canceled out by character, always. Like I've never met anyone who says, well, my husband, you know, he's unfaithful to me, but I don't really care because he's really handsome. Like nobody ever says that. No guy's ever stoked at the fact that his wife, you know, is beautiful on the outside, but on the inside, you know, is a shrew. I mean, they're never like, oh, but I don't even care that she's a vile and wretched woman because she's smoking hot. Like that doesn't happen. So looks are always canceled out by character. Here's what this means then. If you're attracted to somebody based on who they are on the inside, the beauty is it's going to get better over time. So every single year, you're with that person because love is on the inside and the attraction is on the inside. It'll get better and better and better. Let's watch now verse 8. This couple spend time together. You'll notice now, daughters of Jerusalem again. If you don't know, here's where they are. I want you to notice the bottom portion of that verse, though. Where are they? Pasture your young goats by what? Shepherd? Shepherd or shepherd and tent? Or is it shepherds, plural, tents, plural? What's your Bible say? Is it plural? Yeah. I want to just make the observation. The first thing we see about the way this couple begins now to spend time together is they're in groups. It's plural. There's a bunch of shepherds. There's a bunch of tents. There's probably a bunch of ladies just like her hanging out. Point is, this is a group thing. And the reason that's significant is dating has become fascinating. Really, really fascinating. It's first of all, it's like an institution. It's got its own language. And what I've recognized over the years, we've been handling this book for, I don't know, at least 10 years, maybe 15 years. The language changes. So like, what did they used to call dating? Like, think old school. Maybe, how many of you, are there any of you here over 40? Not Peggy, she's 39. Yeah? Okay, can you just imagine, what was the language back in the day in terms of dating? What did you call it? What were some of the terms?
Courting?
Mm-hmm. Going steady? I used to go around. Lori Williams and I were going around for a while. I don't know what we were going around, but that's the language we used. Okay. Was there any others that you could think of? Old school. Just think maybe what your parents or grandparents would have called it.
Getting pinned.
Getting pinned? Not like wrestling. It's
no,
different.
Like, the school pins.
Yeah.
They would get the girls.
Yeah, there you go. Like wearing the Letterman's jacket kind of thing later. Sure. Okay. Tell me about in our culture now today, what do you call it? Facebook official. Okay. What else? So I see you and I see her or he and her. They're hanging out together and I go, oh, hey, are you guys talking together, hanging out? What's that?
I was like, I don't know if it's still used, but I remember item.
Oh, yeah. Are you an item? Sure. My point is it is like designed for confusion. So it's designed to give you the most amount of intimacy and the biggest back door possible. So it's designed to give you all of the perks with none of the responsibilities. Because when he or she gets all salty about like, oh, wait a minute, I thought we were whatever you called it. And you go, oh, no, we were just whatever you want to call it. So, hey, I thought we were dating. Oh, no, we're just hanging out. Oh, I thought we were an item. No, we were just talking. Oh, I thought we were together. Oh, no, we're just friends. Nobody likes getting that one dropped, but you know what I'm saying. The point being, one of the biggest issues we've got, and this book's going to now address it, is the issue of clarity. What does it mean to date someone? And I think there's some principles that this book is going to give us that'll be fascinating. So the first thing is we've got to bring some clarity. The second issue with dating, though, not only is it an institution, but it creates a vicious cycle, and that's what I want to show you here. When you look at a relationship, any relationship, there's three components primarily to a relationship: the emotional component, the spiritual component, and the physical component. Okay? Every relationship, for the most part, has these on a various scale of being shallow to what I'll call intimate. To just sort of practically lay it out, shallow is like, I'm sorry, what's your name? Intimate is, how many kids are we going to have? Okay, so there's that kind of sliding scale. Now, most people enter into a relationship, and as they begin to feel attracted together, the emotional side begins to move very, very quickly. Okay, that's where, like, he wrote a note and you saved it. You heard a song when you were on the first date, and now every time he hears it, he thinks of you. Like, that's the emotional side moving to intimate. Great. In our context, as people of faith, there's a spiritual component. That spiritual component begins to move as well. There's this sense of, wow, maybe this is the right guy. Maybe this is the right girl. Like, he prayed for dinner, and it wasn't awkward, and you know, I saw her in a life group, and I snuck a peek at her Bible, and she's marked up Proverbs 31. Like, this is like, woo! And then there's the physical side. There's the desires that God has given you that are okay desires in the proper context. Now, what we tend to say as Christians is, look, okay, emotionally we're heading that way, all right. Spiritually, okay, we'll pray together, we'll hang out together, we'll study the Bible together, we should be in a life group together. But then we expect or would want the physical to be way back here. And I just want you to think about it a little differently. I want you to think about these things like links in a chain. And the point with that is simply saying this: you cannot expect a relationship that emotionally is moving to intimacy to be physically shallow. You understand what I'm saying? You can't expect a relationship that's emotionally moving to intimacy to be physically shallow, because they're all three connected. And if you've been in a relationship that has crossed moral boundaries, you know exactly what I'm saying. Add to that the fact that as Christians, we say, oh, okay, well, we need to make sure we're attracted. We need to make sure there's chemistry. We need to make sure. So you're like emotionally going there. You're having conversations maybe you shouldn't have, like, hey, you know, I've always wanted a wife like you, or, wow, hey, you seem like the kind of person I'd really like to marry, or, you know, what do you think about kids? You know, it's our first date. I know I don't mean to be awkward, but, well, it is awkward. So we do that, and then we add to that, and this is my opinion, we add to that the spiritual component, and we say, well, I mean, we're dating. You know Jesus. I know Jesus. We should totally pray together. We should totally study our Bible together. We should totally be in life group together. That's the right thing to do. And then you're fighting this thing all along because it's creeping, boom, that way. Every single time. Happens all the time. So can I just make, you know, like, this is just an admonition to say, who told you you needed emotional intimacy? R&B told you that. Movies told you that. Media tells you that. Magazines tell you that. Right? We see all these love stories in the theaters, and there's always this like romantic candlelit dinner, you know, this one thing leads to another. They're slow dancing by the riverbank or whatever, and they're throwing this intimacy on it. They're throwing this intimacy into the spiritual, and then they can't figure out why they're struggling physically. All right. Well, there's a couple things that we see in this relationship that I think will speak into this. One, and we saw it in verse 8, they spend time in groups together. It is interesting to me how many people will live in community, have solid relationships, meaning like dudes with dudes, fart, talk about bacon, let's disciple each other, it's great. But then he starts dating her and he's gone. He disappears. You ever seen that happen with one of your boys? You're like, wait a minute, we used to hang out. And now you're with her all the time. We don't even see you. You guys know what I'm talking about there? Or a girl, she's the same thing. Maybe not the farting bacon thing, but like girls, hanging with girls, discipling, things great. Then she starts dating him, but he won't let her hang out with her girlfriends. Mike, are you kidding me? That is insane. Because what happens with that is when you are alone, one thing leads to another inevitably, all right? And it is super dangerous to pull yourself away from community. Proverbs says, he who separates himself quarrels against all sound wisdom. I mean, there's this sense, and seeks his own desire. There's a sense that when you pull out of community, you're in trouble. You should be able to stay in a group, hang out in a group, chill in a group, meet people in a group, watch people over time in a group. That's the way it ought to be, right? But unfortunately, we break that trend. And here's the thing that happens, by the way. In a relational context that's unhealthy, I'd love to tell you that we learn our lesson. So we're in a relationship, we attract based on looks, we get together with them, only to find out 6 months later, I don't like the way they chew their gum. Golly, they're really annoying the way they laugh. I don't appreciate their bad breath. And you know what? I'm out. So we break up. And then we date someone else. But because the basis of our attraction is looks, we do the same thing. So we find someone else. They're like, oh, I don't mind the way they chew gum. But golly, they're really awkward. And when we eat, they chew with their mouth open. Like, yeah, just like, ah. So then you break up. Now, that would be fine if we managed the intimacy levels. So if I'm in a dating context and I'm not emotionally intimate, I'm not spiritually intimate, I'm not physically intimate, who cares? Date around. Date this girl, then date her friend, then date her sister. It doesn't matter if you're dating correctly. It doesn't matter if you're non-emotional, non-spiritual, non-physical. You understand what I'm saying? But if you're crossing boundaries, which is what typically happens, then you enter into this vicious cycle where when you finally break up with that person, you're not merely breaking up with that person, you are experiencing divorce. Because you've crossed the boundaries emotionally and you've shared things with this person you would never share with anyone other than your spouse. Or maybe better said, you share things with someone that one day when you finally get married, you go, golly, I can't believe we talked about that with that other person. So now you've shared yourself with someone else and then married this person, okay? Not to mention spiritually. Look, there's not really many things you're going to do more intimate than pray with someone. I don't recommend a dating couple or engaged couple pray together. I don't recommend you read your Bible together. I don't recommend you get in life group together. Now people go, what? So no, I don't recommend it. I'm not saying you shouldn't pray, read your Bible, or be in a life group. I'm just saying, don't do it together. You say, why? I said, because you have the rest of your life to do that together. Why don't you just wait, make sure that's the right person, and then pray all you want with your spouse. Be in a life group all the time with your spouse. Read the Bible every day with your spouse. But the intimacy that it brings, it's like trying to tread water carrying a 100-pound ball. I mean, at one point, you're just going to get exhausted, and you're going to go to the bottom. And this is going with you. And the point is, the physical is soon to follow. So keep it shallow. But because we don't learn our lesson and we date for the wrong reasons, by the time we get married, we're going to experience both emotional and physical divorce multiple times before we stand with our spouse. There's a proverb that says, like a dog that returns to its vomit, so is a fool who returns to its folly. And that is the pattern in a dating context. That's the cycle, okay? So we need to bring clarity. We need to break the cycle. So how do you do that? Well, first things first, we see this couple, they're going to date in groups. The beauty of groups is that it keeps it accountable. There's other people involved. It keeps it healthy. Now, if you watch how they begin to dive in together, though, it is fascinating because there's this sense of leadership that he's going to speak out on now, verse 9. Will somebody read, one of you fellas, will you read verse 9 for us, please?
I have compared you, my love, to all my, to my filly among the Pharaoh's chariots. You, your cheeks.
Did Siri not know how to say that? So just verse 9.
Right. I have compared you, my love, to my filly among Pharaoh's chariots.
To my filly? What kind of Bible you read there?
New King James.
New King, old school. All right. To my filly among Pharaoh's chariots. My Bible says to the mare among the chariots of Pharaoh. regardless of the translation, even though I think ours is better, what this text means, ultimately, is that of all of those that are around, there's a distinction in her. So Pharaoh and all of his opulence and glory had a special mare or filly that would pull his chariot, and that was the one that was distinct of all the others around. That's a pattern. And fellas, I want you to notice in verse 9, he's leading out, and he's speaking to her very kindly. Now look, he's not working his mojo here. This isn't a manipulative thing or a manipulative thing. This is literally just him going, sweetie, of all the ladies around, there's something about you now that is different in verse 9. Distinct. Your cheeks are lovely, verse 10, with ornaments, your neck with strings of beads. Can you feel the tenderness, the kindness, the heart level communication that he's sharing? But there's a sense that he is speaking to her and affirming her in a very profound way. In fact, daughters of Jerusalem speak in verse 11, and they say, we will make for you ornaments of gold with beads of silver. What that means, not necessarily the actual ornaments or beads, is not, I don't think, the point. The point is the daughters of Jerusalem are given a thumbs up to this relationship. So I talked about dating in a group. Here's why dating in a group or beginning to date in a group makes a ton of sense. Because when you start to have feelings for someone and you start to sort of pair off with someone, so the group's hanging out and all of a sudden they notice you're spending a lot of one-on-one time with this person, your homeboys or homegirls, whatever, have the opportunity to go, yeah, we like that guy. That guy's a good dude. Or, yeah, we like that girl. That girl's a good dude. They also have the opportunity to go, hey, girlfriend, like, we've seen that guy for like 2 days. We have no idea who he is. We don't know what he's about. Why don't you just hold and don't let your heart get involved yet, okay? Guard your heart until we find out the type of guy this is. So in verse 11, the daughters of Jerusalem affirm this relationship as being something that is healthy. Remember the proverb, now faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. You want to have friends in your life, even in a dating context, that you give freedom to speak into it. You want to date in a fishbowl. Anybody that's in your circle can speak into that. Anybody can say, yes, this is good, or hey, I've got some things I see that I'm concerned about. That's a healthy way to do a dating relationship. Now, they're going to start to spend time together in verses 12 and following. Notice verse 12. Where are they in verse 12? King's table. Where are they in verse 17? What are cedars and cypresses? Trees. Thank you. I was like, trees, idiot? Yes, trees, thank you. Trees, which means they're where? Yeah, probably a park, the woods, something. They're outdoors. All right, chapter 2, verse 4. Where are they there? Banquet hall. So they're at the king's table around cedars and cypresses or at a banquet hall. What's the commonality between all three of those locales? Are they indoors in private? Are they outdoors in public or at least around other people? They're in public. They're around others. First dating principle is date in a group. Second dating principle, date in public. What does that mean, date in public? Well, let me just break it down to you this way. Keep this links in a chain thing in mind. As I've, over time, counseled people in relationships, and people come into my office, let me just tell you the pattern I see. Somebody comes into my office, tears. What happened? Well, we fell physically. Okay, what went down? Well, and it's a story of emotional, spiritual, and then physical intimacy creeped into their relationship. And then I ask the context question, where were you? Well, we were in his apartment, and his roommates were gone. Well, we were at her house, and her roommates were asleep. Well, we were in the car, classy, in the car. We were at my parents' house. And they were out of town or asleep. The pattern is always consistent. It's private. We were in a private place where we had security from people walking in. There was a sense that we were alone, we were in private, and one thing led to another. Now, it's like, hey, why don't you come over? My roommates are gone. We'll watch a movie. That's not what you're going to do. You know that. They know that. That's why you're there. Okay, let me tell you the way it's never gone down. I've never had a couple come into my office, say, what happened? Tears, we fell morally. crossed physical boundaries. One thing led to another, and I'm mortified. I go, okay, great. Where were you? Starbucks. We were at Starbucks, Willow and Ease, and he had Frappuccino. I just couldn't keep my hands off him. Next thing you know, we're on the floor. Never. It's never happened. I've never had anyone say IHOP. Must have been the blueberry pancakes. I don't know what happened. They put something in it because he had syrup on his face, and next thing you know, he's on top of me. Never happened. Now, we laugh about it, but I want you to think back now to stories in your life or stories to people that you know and replay the tapes. I guarantee it was in private. Never in public. And so as a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool returns to its folly, because here we are still repeating that, trying to have candlelit dinner in our apartment when our roommates are gone. I'm like, are you stupid? I'm not saying that you're a moral meltdown. I'm saying you're human, you're fallen, and even redeemed in Christ, there are still desires and passions and temptations that if you're in the wrong context, you're in trouble. And that's the key, context. Tom Nelson, the pastor we studied under in Denton, used to talk about couch fires, and I think it's a brilliant metaphor. I've used it a ton. So just imagine for a moment, I've got a fireplace here, and I put wood in there, and I put some paper on there, and I light that up. Is there a problem with that? No, not at all. Let me say I take that same wood and that same paper, and I put it on a couch in my living room, and I light that up. Is there a problem with that? Yeah, I think you're going to have a problem, okay? Because it's going to catch on fire, not just the wood and the paper. It's going to catch the couch and probably continue to burn and burn down and char everything I hold dear. Now, at first, it seems kind of fun, a little bit naughty, like, oh, this is crazy. I probably shouldn't do this. I should totally stop. But let's keep going. Oh, I should totally stop. But let's go a little farther. I should stop. It's a bonfire in my living room. Boom, burns down everything. Now, it doesn't mean the wood is evil or the fire is evil or the paper is evil. The problem is context. Because if I take that same material and put it in a fireplace, it warms the whole house. So is sexual desire evil? No, of course not. It's given by God. Our passions and a longing to look at someone you care about and think of them in a physically intimate way. Is it wrong to have those emotions, those feelings, those desires? No. The issue is context. What do you do with those desires? Because I could stand in my living room with that wood all day long. Should I make the fire or not? I'm choosing not to, but I'm here. You know, the opportunity is there, but I'm choosing not to. That's fine. You got to wait for the proper context, all right? The proper context of the expression of marital love or the expression of sexuality is marital love. And so what you find with this couple is their passion is starting to grow, all right? They're excited to be together. Verse 12 and following now, watch this. While the king was at his table, my perfume gave forth its fragrance. My beloved is to me a pouch of myrrh which lies all night between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossoms in the vineyards of En-Gedi. Now, what's interesting about verses 13 and 14 specifically is that most fellas have no idea what that means because we see the word breast and can't think straight. But let me tell you what that means. There's a significant distinction between how women process the emotions of a relationship and how men process the emotions of a relationship. So guys, you need to know, for the most part, and I'm speaking in general, there's always exceptions to the rule. You write her a note of how you feel, that thing is like preserved like the Dead Sea Scrolls. I mean, that is like as sacred as it comes. She'll probably have a box. She keeps them in. Like, here's all the notes he wrote me. Isn't it sweet? Like, here's the kind things he said. And look at this. And she'll pull it out and show her friends. And the point being is at night, as a relationship is sort of beginning to grow, you're playing Xbox. She's still thinking about it. She'll wake up in the middle of the night and think about it. She'll wake up in the next morning and think about it. And she'll have you on her mind a lot more than you have her on your mind. It's just that we're wired differently. And she, in this context, is recognizing that she's thinking about him all night long. And the clusters of henna blossoms in the vineyards of En-Gedi, if you've ever been to Israel, En-Gedi is gorgeous in the midst of nothing. I mean, it's literally on the Dead Sea. There's not a dang thing that grows anywhere in sight. And then literally Dead Sea, there's not even life in it, thus the name. Nothing in it. Left, right, bricks, rocks, caves, nothing, nothing, nothing. Boom, beautiful, green, lush vineyards. You're like, wow, what's that? That's in Gedi. And so sure enough, she's saying that he is like henna blossoms, this fragrant blossoms in the vineyards of provisions of Engedi. She's processing him a lot, thinking about him a lot. Now, it doesn't mean that he's a caveman, because look at verse 15. How beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves. Now, he's still thinking about her, and he speaks about her, but what does he notice? What does he see? Her eyes. I think it's significant. He sees her eyes. What do they say about the eyes? The gateway to the soul, right? Point being, you could see something in someone's eyes. You learn a lot about someone by looking at their eyes. He's sitting with her. He's spending time with her. He's seeing her eyes. He's not looking anywhere else. In fact, what's interesting is, what do we know about her physically? Do we know anything? Is she even good looking?
She's got a tan.
She's tan? She's black but lovely? Got a couple calluses? We have no idea what this girl looks like. And yet, is this guy attracted to her? Oh, yeah, and what does he see? Her eyes. Keep going now. Watch this. Verses 16 and following. She speaks. She says, "How handsome you are, my beloved, and so pleasant. Indeed, the beams of our houses are cedars. The rafters are cypresses." Now, guys, I want you to just ask yourself a question. When's the last time you've been accused of being pleasant? Isn't that a great word, pleasant? What does your New King James say in that passage? Do any of your Bibles have a different word than the word pleasant in verse 16?
Delightful.
Delightful. This guy just gives life. This guy's a joy to be around. Takes interest in her. Has conversations with her. Hangs out with her, is really into her, just having a good time. And he's just a pleasant dude. He's not harsh, he's not controlling, he's not domineering. He's just a kind, gentle man. And she recognizes that. You are so pleasant. What a great accusation. I just encourage you, fellas, if you're single and you spend time with a sweet lady, would you please be pleasant and just be kind and tender? Because it does something in her. I mean, we've already talked about it. What does she think about herself in chapter 1, verse 6? Nothing physically attractive, nothing worth noticing. I'm black but lovely. Like, I'm beautiful on the inside, but truthfully, she's not really putting herself out there. But ladies, if a guy treated you the way this guy has treated her so far, how would that make you feel? Would you want that kind of treatment from a guy? Well, look at chapter 2, verse 1. Will one of you ladies read that? One. We could have Siri read it if any of you ladies want to.
I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valley.
A rose of Sharon, or Sharon, the lily of the valleys. The plains of Sharon are the northern coastlines of Israel, sort of just west of Mount Carmel, just west of Megiddo. Beautiful area, gorgeous. She says of herself, "I am the rose of Sharon, the lily of the valleys." Roses and lilies are beautiful. Question, has anything changed physically? Is she different than she was in chapter 1 physically? No? Nothing's changed physically. So what's changed? Say it again.
How he's treating her.
This guy comes alongside this girl and just breathes life. He just breathes love in an appropriate way. Kindness, gentleness, pleasantness, delight. And she's just eating it up. I mean, she's doing something in her. It's making her think of herself differently. That's the power you have as a man. To take a woman created in the image of God in all of her beauty, in strength, and in frailty, and to speak into that and just let her breathe, let her have life. Just make her feel great about herself. Now, it's fascinating to me. The power we have as men over our wives. I say over. How about in the lives of our wives? I recognize that I can say things to my wife that instantly give her life. I can also say things that instantly bring her down. It's powerful. And most of it, not all, but most of it revolves around the external. She'll ask a question. Hey, do you think such and so is attractive? I'm like, oh gosh. Pause. Oh, what does she mean by that? I mean, how do I answer that if I say yes? She'll feel threatened. If I say no, she'll call me a liar. Like, literally, that happens all the time. Do I look fat in this? Pause. Oh gosh, well, what do I say, right? Very powerful. So you have to choose your words wisely, and you have to steward that responsibility, all right? Because the greatest gift you can give your wife and your even a girl you're dating is just affirm her, just encourage her, just breathe life, all right? Now, that is, it's a powerful interaction, and she is moved in verse 1. He responds, like the lily among the thorns, so is my darling among the maidens. Same concept as the mare among the chariots of Pharaoh. He's saying, of all that's around, there's something about you that's distinct. He's not saying, hey, you're hot and slapping her on the backside. That's not what we're talking about. He just says, hey, look, there's a lot of beautiful women out there, but there's something about you that's just distinct. There's something about you that I'm really enjoying spending time with you. I'm really enjoying hanging out with you. Thank you. It's a privilege for me to just be with you, and I'm just grateful for the time. In verses 3 and following now, she's going to respond and go into a longer piece about how she's feeling about this man. Will one of you ladies read 3 and 4? What do you see, 3 and 4? What do you see? She's reflecting now of the love of her man and says what? Pull principles out of that. What's happening? More than nothing. There's a lot more than nothing happening. Come on, let's play a little bit. Get into it.
Like, sit down in his shade. It's like kind of like she's like feeling secure or safe.
Yes, yes. Hey, this is poetry, right? So, yes. There's a provision for her. There's shade. She feels safe. What else? What else? I'm not letting you off the hook.
Providing. He's
yeah.
With the fruit and bringing her to the banquet house, and he's providing.
Yes, yes. There's provision. Look, like the apple tree, which bears fruit not for itself but for others to enjoy. You get the picture that she's kind of reclining, sitting underneath his shade, enjoying his provision, totally secure, totally fulfilled. This is a beautiful place to be. Do you think he's the only tree? No, what's it say? Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest. What is she saying in that moment? She could be under any tree. She chose his. Guys, you ever been around? Have you ever been in a relationship where you can be in a sea of like studs, and when she just reaches over and grabs your hand, what she just said is, I choose your tree. I remember being in situations where Jen would do that for me, and it just breathes life. Because ladies, you need to know, I've never met a guy who's not insecure. I just never have. Every guy I've met in some ways is insecure. And for you to just say, I choose your tree. Oh, it's powerful. Powerful. Now, watch what else happens, though. In his shade, she took delight. She sat down. His fruit was sweet to her taste. And he brings her to the banquet hall. So this is not about Jesus. Okay, great song, fun hand motions, totally unbiblical. He's brought me to his banquet hall. And his banner over me is love. You guys remember Lord of the Rings? There's like epic battle scenes in Lord of the Rings. And there's always that guy who's got like the flag that's the banner for that platoon, company, whatever. So in the midst of carnage and battle, you look around, you're like, where are my people? Like I'm away from my crew. And you see the banner, you go, there they are. And it rallies you to them. The point is, when this guy walks with her into public, the banner that he carries over her is love. I'll give you a practical example. Guys walk in the back door here at this place holding a girl's hand, and almost instantly I see the banner. And here's how I can tell. Guy walks in, and she's head held high, holding his hand, and I can tell the banner's love that when they walk in, she goes, I'll see you in a little bit. And she slides away, says hi to her girls, hangs out, comes over here. He's over getting a seat or whatever, doing her thing, and then she'll go and she'll sit next to him. And I'm like, that a boy. That a boy. That is love. Let me tell you why I say that. Because the contrast is striking. He walks in holding her hand. She dang near holding his pocket. You know? And everywhere he goes, she's like right there with him, you know, like not proud. She's kind of almost like head hung down. He never lets her out of his sight. You know, he goes and gets coffee. He and she just kind of follows him. And I'm just like, dude, like if I could, we'd take you out behind the woodshed. You know, like you're not treating this woman right. And you can tell, you can see it. When this woman's in public, it's like love on display. Everybody sees it because of the way this guy treats her. He brought me to his banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. That's the way it ought to be. Yeah, question.
Brad, how come in 4 then it was taken into a song for Jesus? Like, why was that?
It's the misinterpretation. It's Sunday, I taught at another church in town, and the Sunday school, they brought up 5 different Sunday schools during the Sunday school hour to talk about what they were learning. They happen to be learning Song of Solomon. And they misquoted and misinterpreted every single passage. And I'm sitting there in the front row next to the pastor. I'm like, oh, that's not what it means. That's not what it says. Because the allegorical interpretation is so powerful that people assume this looks like it's about a dude and his girl. It's got to be about Jesus. So Jesus has brought us to his banqueting hall. So last week we talked about the two primary modes of interpretation is either this is Israel and God in Israel or Jesus in the church. And so the idea of he brought us into his banqueting table and his banner over me is a misinterpretation. That's where it comes from. Make sense? So verse 5, and the reason, just hold that thought, is so, well, wait a minute, that's what I've always been taught. That mode of interpretation completely falls apart in verse 5. And in chapter 4, rather, as well. Look at verse 5. It seems out of context. Will one of you ladies read verse 5? Does it seem to make sense?
Sustain me with raisins, refresh me with apples, for I'm sick with love.
Keep going.
His left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me.
Now, that doesn't seem to fit. What do we know about mandrakes? Raisin cakes and apples. What do you know about mandrakes? Think Jacob.
Fertility.
What's that?
Fertility.
Fertility. Assumed to be maybe even aphrodisiacs. Jacob's pimped out by one wife to be with another over mandrakes. So it's meant to be fertility giving. That's the assumption in the Eastern culture. She says, sustain me with raisins, refresh me with apples. Man, I'm lovesick. She's wanting him. May his left hand be under my head and his right hand embrace me. That is as intimate as it can be. Now, some of you know my wife. My wife is a hugger, big time. Hugs everyone. So look, you meet my wife. You want to give her a hug, you go right ahead. But I'd like you to think about what kind of hug you're going to give my wife. All right? So side hug, no harm, no foul. It's all good. All right? You want to sneak in for a full frontal? You better hip out the thing, but we're still good. No problem, okay? You come in and put your left hand under her head and embrace her with her right hand, I'm darn near morally obligated to fight you. Because there's nothing more intimate than that position. So what's happening here? This man has invested in her. He has spoken life into her. He has been kind and pleasant and godly. Has he touched her? Have we seen any mention of that? It doesn't look like he's even laid a hand on her. And this relationship is getting hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter to the point where she in this moment, like, I want you, she says. Time out. Is that okay? Ladies are like, no eye contact. Don't look at it. Is that okay? That's the question, isn't it? So as a follower of Jesus, is it okay for me to feel those feelings? As a single, is it okay to you to, for you to feel that? My question is yes, because those are God-given feelings. The question is, what do you do with them? So if I've been crucified in Christ, and it's no longer me who lives, but Christ who lives in me, then the Lord of my life is not my flesh. The Lord of my life is my Lord. Therefore, I beat my body, make him my slave, so I'm not disqualified. So I recognize that this is the will of God, my sanctification, that I abstain from sexual immorality, that each of us learn how to possess our own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in lustful passion like the heathen who do not know God. So the feelings are okay, but what do you do with it? We mentioned when we started, one of the most difficult portions of this book is figuring out who's speaking, right? And it's bounced back and forth and back and forth. One of the biggest issues I have with other interpretations or other Bible translations, rather, is who's saying verse 7. Because verse 7, in my opinion, is the key, because you're going to see it here and then repeat it again in the next chapter. How many of your Bibles, just out of curiosity, say that it's the woman, the Shulamite, who's saying it? Okay? I don't think so. I don't like that that translation or interpretation. I think the guy is speaking, and I'll explain why here in just a moment. My opinion, what's happening here is this relationship is now progressing. They've attracted for the right reasons. One thing in a good way is leading to another. They're emotionally beginning to move towards intimate, but they're holding the, they're pumping the brakes on the intimacy, trying to stay in groups, trying to stay public, to stay in an honoring way. And I think she is responding very strongly to him. Let me tell you what is happening. For most women feel more deeply than men do. All kinds of scientific research on the fact that women have an ability to feel at a level that men don't, okay? So what that means is, on a take the same scale of shallow to intimate, shallow being what's your name, intimate being how many kids you want. Guys, if you're at like a 3 in the relationship, she's probably at a 6, okay? Not a bad thing. It just means, ladies, you're thinking about it. Guys, if you're at a 6, she's probably at a 9. So if you're in a dating relationship and dating, a date has become plural dating, and over and over and over you're hanging out together, don't be surprised if she's looking at Bride Magazine. Don't be surprised if when she goes to a wedding, she's really not going to a wedding. She's evaluating. Oh, I like that. Oh, I don't like that. Oh, I like those flowers. Oh, I like that. There's not been a guy I've ever met in my life who cared about the table settings at a reception. And yet a woman will have a binder. Right? Or now in our days, a Pinterest board. Right? Which is fine. But guys, it means you need to be careful. So in a dating context, fellas, you can't be saying stuff like, hey, you're the kind of woman I've wanted to marry. You can't be talking about, I've always wanted to settle down with someone like you. You can't be talking about how many kids you want. You can't do that. Because she's going there. And if you feed that thing, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. Unless you mean it. Which is a side note. When it comes to dating, date versus dating, can I just make a distinction? I think you can date. I think you can date a second time. I'll even give you a third time if you're shallow hell on all three of these. But if you're starting to move towards intimacy and date is becoming dating, you got to change the game. We'll talk about that here in just a moment. So back to our context. She is fired up. May his left hand be under my head, his right hand embrace me. She wants this guy. Is that okay? Question is, what do you do with that? Verse 7, watch leadership. And why, ladies, you need a man of character. Because the man speaks up. He says, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the hinds of the field, you do not arouse or awaken love until it pleases. Literally, until the time pleases. He says, oh, that's very sweet, but not yet. Not yet. And he speaks up. Now, why is that so significant that he speaks up? Well, a couple of things with that in mind. Good feelings, bad timing. The reason it's good that he says it is God wired us differently. To use a practical metaphor, men are like microwaves and women are like crock pots. Meaning, from a physical standpoint, men are visual. We see visual stimulation, bodies begin to respond, visual stimulation gone, bodies don't respond very quickly, like warming up a burrito. There it is. There it's gone. Okay, move on. Back to Xbox. Whatever, okay? Meaning it's quick. It's visual, all right? Women are not quite wired like that. So women are wired more like crock pots. I had a stepmom in my home for about 13 months, and she was Italian, and would cook spaghetti sauce in a crock pot. And I hated it because it felt like it cooked for like 4 days. You know, like plug the thing in, and it's heating up, and it's heating up, and it's heating up. It's like, my goodness, like she's cooking this forever. The thing about crock pots, though, is if they get hot enough that they start to overflow or boil over, you can unplug it. It's still going to boil over. You can take the top off. It's still going to boil over. And there's nothing you can do to stop it. Once it's there, and it's going to take a long time for it to cool off. Okay, that's the distinction. Which is one of the reasons why, by the way, when a woman is going to get married, her friends throw her a lingerie shower, and fellas, your groomsmen are not going to throw you one. Because she doesn't want to see you in that. But you want to see her in that. Because men are visual, women aren't. Men respond quickly to what they see, women don't. The point being, when you get into a relationship, guys, you've got to know that. Which means, and here's what happens in a bad relationship, ladies, if you are attracted to the wrong type of guy, he'll say things like this. Hey, look, I really care about you. Like, you're really special to me. And I really want to do this right. And so if at any time in our relationship, if I make you feel uncomfortable by the things that we're doing, would you just let me know? Because I don't want to put you in that situation. And then he puts you in that situation. And you're like, whoa, what are you doing? Oh, I'm so sorry. I just really care about you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Next time. You're like, what are you doing? He's reaching for your pants again or whatever. You're like, whoa. He'll keep doing that. Because what he knows is if he keeps doing that, you might say no the first time. You might say no the second time. But then the boundaries will get farther and farther and farther. That gal I talked to Sunday night, that's exactly what happened. I said, are you guys physical in your relationship? Yeah. Yeah, we are. Over time? Yep. One thing's led to another? Yep. He keeps pushing you farther and farther? Yep. That's exactly what we're talking about. This guy steps up, recognizing he's the one who can see, begin to respond, but say, no, I need to back off. And he takes the leadership. Like Joseph in Potiphar's house. She comes on to him. He's like, I'm out. And he runs away. You've got to date a man, ladies, who has the ability enough to be a man and recognize that the Lord of his life is not his desires or passions or feelings or urges, but the Word of God and the Lord Jesus Christ. He'll submit to that, not his flesh. So when push comes to shove or in the moment where it gets heated, he'll say, sweetie, don't arouse or awaken love until the time is right. The context is not right. We have not built the right context yet. I need to go right now. Now, there were times when Jen and I were dating that literally, like one time, this was stupid, but one time she loved planes, watching planes land. I drove a Ford Exploder, and so we lifted the back end of my Exploder, backed up to the runway, laid down in the back of my car, classy, and watched the planes land. And it was fine at first. But the planes were landing, and we're playing smooth jazz, and you know, it's like, I'm in my head going, dude, what are you doing? Like, you know better. You teach about this. Get out. I'm like, no, I'm cool. I got it. I got this. Like, I'm different than I used to. I got this, you know. One thing's leading to another. Next thing you know, we're like hugging and she rolls. You know, it's like not doing anything inappropriate yet, but it's going like Mach 1 that way. Like, it's heading there now. And finally, I looked at her. I said, you know what? We need to go. She goes, no, let's watch a couple more. I said, now. We need to go. Trust me. Now. And thank the Lord we got out of there. My point is, that's real. That's what happens. Now, ladies, if you are dating a boy, or if you're dating a man who doesn't love Jesus, he won't say no, and you eventually won't either. And that's what happens. So, do not arouse or awaken love until it pleases. Make sense? So, that is dating. Now, what happens is, any questions on the dating piece? Because verse 8 shifts, we'll go to courtship and try to, if we can, get a running start on that. Yes, sir?
Just mainly looking at like the emotional thing, you're saying staying emotionally shallow so that the rest doesn't build. But I mean, if you're being intentional, like spending time with them, even in public, spending time with them, getting to know them, I mean, it's our job, even like both men and women, to get to know the other one as we're going. So eventually, I mean, those meters are going to grow.
Yeah.
In all reality, like, what type of boundary sets? Because, you know, there, you don't want to get into a marriage and find out that they've, you know, got some crazy style past or some, you know.
Yep. Great question. Could you guys hear that in the back? Okay. Let me give you a couple thoughts on that. One, let me give you an equation. Time plus communication equals intimacy. So it doesn't matter where the time's spent. If you spend time, FaceTime with a woman or ladies with a man, plus communication, meaning you're talking about stuff, it's going to equal intimacy, whether you wanted it to or not. So you just have to be mindful of the kind of time you spend with someone. The other is you have to have a content filter. What's appropriate to talk about and what's not? So in a dating context, am I trying to get into her past? No. Do I want to talk about your greatest sins, your greatest wounds, what God's taught you through it? No. Why would you talk about that here? You don't want to get into that. You're just getting to know somebody. Do I like you? I don't mean like you. I mean, like, are you fun to hang out with? Do you make me laugh? Are you silly like I am? Like, do we have fun together as we're with our friends? Do we enjoy one another's company? If so, that's what you're looking for in a date or dating context. But it's non-emotional, non-spiritual, non-physical. It's non-escalating. It's just you hanging out, which allows you to take the pressure off a little bit. So it doesn't mean if you go out on a date with somebody, you're going to marry him. So please, do us a favor. Change the culture. So it shouldn't be a big deal if the date is happening with these things in mind. It shouldn't be a big deal if you date this girl and this girl and this girl and this girl and this girl. You shouldn't get the reputation of dating around because you haven't done anything with any of them other than gone broke buying them all dinner. No harm in that. And by the way, fellas, would you please open her door? Would you please pull out her chair? Would you please reach for your wallet? Please. It's the right thing to do. Let's be gentlemen in these relationships, all right? So you want to have that content filter. So be mindful of time, be mindful of the content filter, and then recognize when the boundary's crossed, then you need to take the next step, and that's courtship. So dating is casual. Courtship is intentional. And I don't like, somebody mentioned courtship as a term we use for dating. I'm not a fan of tossing that around because I think we toss it around flippantly. We don't really know what it means. And I'm not convinced that the Bible teaches dating or courtship, but I think the Bible does teach a way of doing relationships that's just different than what we do. If you're in a group and you see a girl or girls, you see a guy, and you're like, oh, wait a minute, I think I like this person. I kind of like hanging out with them. They make me laugh. They make me better. I feel comfortable around them. I'm not insecure around them. Then take it to the next level. And at that point, that's where I'll challenge the men now to step up and lead. Okay, good question. And we'll get into courtship. If at the end of courtship I haven't answered that thoroughly, let's swing it back around. Okay, any other thoughts on dating? Groups, public, invite your friends in, non-emotional, non-spiritual, non-physical, non-escalating, done. Fair enough? Look at verse 8 now, chapter 2. Listen, my beloved, behold, he is coming, climbing on the mountains, leaping on the hills. My beloved is like a young stag. Behold, he is standing on our wall. He is looking through the windows. He is peering through the lattice. Now, be careful, fellas. You can get arrested if you try to do that today. The point is, in verses 8 and following, this relationship is going to now take it to the next level. So they've spent time together. There's chemistry. There's fireworks. They're liking it. She came on to him. He showed his godliness by saying, no, sweetie, not yet. Neat feelings. I'm flattered, but I'm not going to go there. And so now they're going to spend time together. And there's an excitement in 8 and following. In fact, look at the verses 10 and following. Tell me if you can pick out what type of year it is. Behold, my beloved responded and said to me, arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along. For behold, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers have already appeared in the land. The time has arrived for the pruning of the vines. The voice of the turtle doves has been heard in our land. The fig tree is ripe in its figs. The vines are in blossom. They've given forth their fragrance. Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along. What kind of year, or what type of year is it? Spring. Tell me about spring. What's that?
Ring by spring.
Ring by spring. Got it. Sorry, I couldn't understand. Yes, I like that. So yeah, spring, what is it? Tell me about it.
New start.
Yeah, new start. New life. Blossoms, fragrance, allergies, beauty, fruit is coming. Like this is like exciting and new and fun, and the dormancy of winter is gone, and everything's budding and everything's green and everything's beautiful in Fresno until like June when it's all dead. But it's coming, right? It's gorgeous, fun, exciting. That's how she is seeing now this relationship. And the thing I want you to notice is I think it's fascinating. This guy now is setting up time to be with her. And it's a life-giving thing. And it's fun. And it's enticing. And yet, even in the midst of courtship, which, by the way, I want to just suggest that what courtship is just an intentional process of deepening. So it's where you're exploring the depths of these things in an appropriate way with the purpose of moving towards marriage. So I don't recommend you court a bunch of people. I do recommend you date a bunch of people. You can tell people I said that. Date everybody. As long as dating is non-emotional, non-spiritual, non-physical, why not? Worst case scenario, ladies, you find your best restaurant in town because you've been to them all with some guy who's bought you dinner. Who cares? That's great. But if you haven't crossed boundaries, what you're doing is developing, by the way, what I would call a theology of relationship. And I encourage you to have that. So fellas, you need to write down what the type of person that you're looking for is. What are the qualities you're looking for? I highly recommend you make a list. If you don't make a list, you're throwing a dart to a wall and then drawing a bullseye around it one day. What are you looking for? What type of person do you need? I have a tendency, if I'm not careful, to be really serious. I needed someone that was fun. If you know my wife, I did really well. She's crazy and drives me crazy. But I love her so much because we're so different. It's beautiful to see that. But lay out your theology of relationship. And by the way, be mindful that we still don't know what she looks like, this woman. Right? So it's not about what she looks like. Well, I need to date a blonde or a brunette, or she needs to be this, or a yoga pant wearing, whatever. None of that really matters. Like, it's interesting, as I look at the type of women on the outside I dated, and then my wife, she's different than anybody I ever dated. And so much better. Because the type of woman she is on the inside. That's where the beauty lies. Write all that down. Now, I think my wife is stunning, but my point is, it wasn't on my list. I wasn't looking for a woman who looked like my wife. And ladies, you need to do the same thing. Have a theology of relationship. These two had one. There seems to be a match. The relationship's moving forward. It's heading places, but notice verse 14. He replies, "Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret place of the steep pathway. Let me see your form and let me hear your voice, because your voice is sweet and your form is lovely." That's strange. I mean, does that not seem like a contrast from 8 through 13? Hey, he's coming over. I'm excited. We're having a date. He's on his way. To now she's hiding? That seems strange. What's going on in verse 14? Ladies, what do you think? Say again?
She's nervous.
Yeah, she's nervous. Tell me what you think she's nervous about, ladies.
Is he for real?
Yeah. You think she feels a little embarrassed about the previous incident with mandrakes and raisins and apples and left hand and hugs? And think she's a little embarrassed with that? Probably. Why would she be nervous? This is not a game anymore. This is not play anymore. Like, this is real. She likes this guy a lot. And so far, he's been the real thing. But the question is, to the point, is he going to continue to be? Now, what's interesting, she's hiding. And how does he speak to her? Fellas. How does he speak to her in her insecurity, in her fear?
He affirms her.
Yeah, affirms her. Is he angry? No. Is he frustrated? No. He just calls to her. I mean, look at the language. Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret place of the steep pathway, let me see your form and let me hear your voice. because your voice is sweet and your form is lovely. He just calls her. He's like, sweetie, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I am who I said I was. I'm going to be consistent in your life. And you don't need to worry about that. And I'll just call to you. I'm not frustrated with you. I'm not angry with you. I'm not going to punish you. Oh, come on. What's wrong with you? I'm not going to do that. I'm here. And I'll be who I said I was. And so I'll just wait whenever you're ready. And it's just it's a beautiful picture, because as the relationship deepens, remember, lady or men, if you're a six, ladies are probably a nine. She's scared because this is the real thing. And she sees it and feels it. And in verse 15, there's a statement made that is fascinating. Catch the foxes for us, the little foxes that are ruining the vineyards while the vineyards are in blossom. Did you guys cover the proverb of the sluggard whose vineyard is completely overgrown with thistles and nettles and its wall was broken down? The stone wall would be used for not just marking out your property, but protection so that beasts of the field, so to speak, couldn't get in and ruin the vineyard. Now, does anyone in here spend time in vineyard farming? Anybody in the fields? Okay. Tell me what would happen if the blossoms were in any way hindered, whether it was destroyed by frost or mold or mildew or eaten by something. What would happen to the crop? Okay. What if not all of them were destroyed, but just some of them? You'll have a crop, but maybe not. It won't be as fruitful is the issue, right? She's saying, catch the foxes for us, the little foxes that'll ruin the vineyard while the vineyards are in blossom. Meaning, are you willing to do the work necessary to protect our relationship that it could be as fruitful as possible? Make sense? Will you do that work? Because every woman's greatest, well, I say every woman, that's probably an overstatement, most women's greatest fear is that they'll date you, fellas, and you're creative and charming and spontaneous and heartfelt and genuine. Then you'll get engaged, and you're creative and fun and take initiative and lead, and then you get married. And then you're an oaf. You're sitting on the couch playing poker again with your buddies, you know, checking your fantasy team, speaking in monosyllabic words. How was your day? All right. How was work? Good. And she's like, I mean, like over here, like you lied to me. You baited and switched me. I mean, you showed me that you were a kind, gentle, tender man. And now I've got this oaf. Not only that, but we're so emotionally disconnected that, no, I don't want to go put on lingerie. No, I don't want to go into the bedroom. No, I don't want to be together. Because you're using me. That's a woman's fear. And so this woman is asking, are you going to catch the foxes that would ruin our vineyard? Are you willing to do the work? I'll give you a principle, fellas. Where no oxen are, the manger's clean. But much increase comes by the strength of an ox. Means this. If you're not willing to do the hard, heavy emotional lifting of cultivating a relationship, stay single. If you're not willing to be humble and apologize, to admit when you're wrong, and to invest emotionally into a woman that will want and need more than you ever thought humanly possible, stay single. If you're not willing to conflict in health, to check your temper at the door, to respond kindly, even in disagreement, even when arguments are irrational, stay single. Because if and when you get married, you're going to have to scoop the manger out. You're going to have to shovel the barn. My point with that is, there is more benefit in my life than I could have ever imagined being married. I could not imagine not being with my wife. I will also tell you, there is more work than I ever thought imaginable being married. Now, it's worth it, but you got to count the cost. And that's what she's asking. Are you going to count the cost? Are you willing to do what you said you would? Because right now I'm liking you. Right now I'm feeling it. Right now I actually have just come on to you in a way that I'm a little embarrassed by. You handled it well, but I'm not sure if you're going to keep handling our relationship well. And I just want to know, are you willing to do that? She asks the question. We don't know exactly what he says in response to that. But as we'll cover next week, she likes the response. But we'll get to that next week. Questions or thoughts as we wrap up then? Okay. Next week, we'll continue the story in verse 16. We'll cover the rest of courtship. I'll give you some practical, like, here's kind of what it means, I think, recommendations, some steps you can go through. And then what we'll do is look at just quickly the engagement process. I say quickly only because I think we get about six verses on the engagement. And then, time permitting, we'll start chapter 4, which is the honeymoon night. Okay? Let's pray together. Father in heaven, I just pray that we as your people would handle the most precious gift that you have entrusted to us, these relationships, that we'd handle them well, that we might make really good decisions, considering this is the second most important decision we will ever make. One is recognizing your sovereignty in our life and coming to faith in Christ. Two is the person that we will spend our time with. And so I pray, Father, whether it's dating or courtship, engagement or marriage, that, Father, you would allow us to handle these relationships in a way that would reflect your glory and your honor. And so we'll thank you in Christ's name. Amen. All right.